Science can tell us plenty about the creatures that inhabit the natural world, but in quieter moments we learn of things that remain mysteries to the people who study wildlife, like why red band trout leave Upper Klamath Lake and head into the lake's tributaries. This is what happens every year in Oregon's largest freshwater lake. And this year, the people who study red band trout have a new tool in understanding the migration, radio equipment to help track the red band trout movements. Bill Tinniswood is an assistant fish biologist in the Klamath Watershed District of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Bill, welcome.
Yeah, great to be here.
Good to have you today. People get used to hearing about the steelhead and other kinds of trout. How numerous and significant are red band trout in the Upper Klamath ecosystem?
Well, it's probably one of the best fisheries in Oregon for a trophy product. I mean, these fish can get in excess of 31 inches and over 15 pounds. So in reality, those are some monster fish that actually exceed the size of some of the rogue, even the rogue summer steelhead.
Wow. So these are like the top of the food chain, it sounds like, in Upper Klamath Lake.
Oh, yeah. They feed extensively on chub and fathead minnows in Upper Klamath Lake.
Are they pretty good indicators, Bill, of the overall health of the lake?
Definitely. And that's what we're trying to look at with this study. There's been a lot of studies on the endangered species of Lost River and short-nosed suckers, but no one's really actually looked at the trout to see, why are they leaving the lake, when they're leaving the lake, and, where are they going?
Based on what you know so far, is there any particular indication about the overall health of Upper Klamath Lake?
As it's in the, it's in the press a lot. I think these trout are pretty incredible. They've adapted a life history that they can take advantage of the lake when there's good water quality. So, I think for about, 8 months out of the year, it's pretty good water quality. The trout can be out there. But, July, August, September are times where, the lake can go anoxic because of algae blooms. When those algae blooms die, it creates a huge area of really low dissolved oxygen and really high pH. A pH can exceed 10. Which is highly alkaline.
Is that given the mineral surroundings of the lake, is that unusual?
Yeah, the lake has, historically it's been a eutrophic lake, but with our land management practices in conjunction with, a high phosphorus level and, of course, the history around that lake with Mount Mazama exploding as well. Yeah, basically we've turned the lake from a eutrophic lake to a hyper-eutrophic lake. And you can see that in the sediment core samples. The last 100 years, the effects by man has caused this lake to, go to the next extreme.
So what does that mean, eutrophic, eutrophying?
Oh, it basically means like a highly productive system. So, for example, there's two types of lakes. There's a ligotrophic lake, which could be like Courier Lake, super clear, not much productivity. Eutrophic means basically highly productive. So Upper Klamath Lake, has a lot of wetland vegetation, shallow, and it's getting shallower and shallower through geologic time.
Is that from silting? Is that from human activity? A combination thereof?
No, it's a natural. It's just a natural process that a lot of lakes go through, especially in the basin you're looking at up Klamath Lake. So, no, yeah, it's just a kind of a natural process.
Okay, I got a little hung up on the lake there. I want to come back to the fish now. What is the big mystery about the behavior of the red band trout?
Well, it's just, when did they leave the lake? We're not sure exactly what water quality variable is driving them from lake. Like I just talked about, there's dissolved oxygen, there's water temperature, there's also the pH I was speaking of. So that's the first thing we're trying to get our pinpointed is what is driving the fish from lake. And it also could be disease and parasites are driving from lake because as the water warms, they could get attacked by the numerous critters in this really high productive lake.
Your assumption is that they would stay in the lake because there's food there? Is that the general starting point?
Exactly. So these fish are huge. They have a real high energetic demand, especially when they get up to that 28 to 30 inch trophy size range. So they would, they prefer to be out in the lake feeding. Instead of having to go to much colder water, and when you go to those much colder water areas, there isn't as much food to sustain you.
We're talking to Bill Tenniswood, who's an assistant fish biologist in the Klamath Watershed District of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, ODFW. We're talking about red band trout in Upper Klamath Lake and radio devices to track them. We're going to be talking about those in just a few moments. And you can join the conversation as we talk about the overall health of Upper Klamath Lake and one of the key indicator species there, red band trout. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone. Join the conversation by email at jx@jeffnet.org. So is it a question of when or why or a combination of those questions, Bill?
I think it's a combination of those questions, but also what? What habitat are they going to? And that might be maybe the most important question, because we have a lot of great potential in Upcombe Lake to restore habitat, especially in the really cold water tributaries of 4 Mile and 7 Mile, which were channelized back in the 1940s. And also, huge ranches were also levied off, so there's about 20,000 acres of potential wetland habitat that 4 Mile and 7 Mile Creek used to flow through. So there's a huge opportunity to restore some of these thermal refuge areas these fish go to. So getting an understanding of what the fish are using now as far as habitat and where they're going could be really vital to improving habitat with our project partners, Trout Unlimited and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, are the two primary ones in the future.
At the peak of lake warming over the course of a summer season, what will be the difference, for example, in the temperature alone just between Upper Klamath Lake and some of these tributaries?
Upper Klamath Lake is probably going to be on the surface 80 degrees plus, but of course, you get down to the bottom, it's more like 75. And that's a great question, because that was one of the things I was really amazed at, was where these fish went and what temperatures they were using. We were seeing fish holding at 50 degree water where the surface temperature was 70, 73, so 23 degree difference between, and that's pretty incredible. So they're finding these little thermoclines and little areas of, you know, cold water coming in, yet the surface could be really warm.
So is that unusual for a fish to head for that much of a thermal refuge?
That was more of an extreme example, but I'm still amazed. I thought of these fish as, you know, they would be using a lot warmer water than they are, but they are finding cold water. Most of the fish we found have been in between that 50 to 68 degrees. It seems like that's their comfort zone. We have found them in the 70s, but I thought we'd find a lot more occurrences of fish holding and feeding in that, you know, mid 70 degree range, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
They're heading for summer homes, it sounds
like. That was actually the case when they took some red band trout from the, you know, the more eastern extent of their range over in Lake County. They took some from 12 Mile in that area over there by Adel, and they found most red band trout prefer to be around that, you know, 58 degrees temperature if you give them a choice. So I think there's so much cold water in this basin, especially with the Williamson River, Wood River, and the whole Rocky Point area, that they can find their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's pull out a little bit and talk about fish more generally without a specific focus on the red band. I mean, some fish do have feeding seasons and times when they do not eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if red band trout is one of those.
Oh, definitely. I think I think these fish, they get a lot of, they're just like a steelhead. They can get a lot of the reserves in the lake, and there are times when they go into the river, especially when they're getting staging for spawning, that they're not eating very much.
All right, that certainly makes sense given their behavior here. Again, we're talking to Bill Tenniswood at Oregon Fish and Wildlife about red band trout in Upper Klamath Lake and a method of tracking them involving radio technology. If you have questions about fish movements here specifically to Upper Klamath Lake, or maybe more generally, it sounds like Bill is equipped to talk about that. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So what ideas were floated for tracking the trout, Bill?
Oh yeah, there's been lots of ideas. Actually, this is kind of the idea of Dr. Johnny Armstrong at Oregon State University. I've done a lot of telemetry in the past, and he and I are pretty obsessed with the Klamath Basin red band trout. I think we both had similar experiences trying to catch these large trophy fish when we were younger, and I think we became somewhat obsessed with the fish. So we also have another method is we use, the USGS has been helping us extensively with, is putting the little pit tags in the red band trout. and we've been doing that for several years as well. That's another cheaper way to see when the fish go into the refuge areas, and that actually was a way that cued us off pretty amazingly. Is our some of our first fish within 4 or 5 days from being tagged in the lake for whatever reason immediately migrated over into the cold water into the Williamson River, even though the water quality hadn't degraded in Upper Klamath Lake. So we're still scratching our head on that one. It might be what's called a tag effect, and I'm almost thinking these fish are actually really smart. Maybe if they feel like they're getting stressed at all, they just migrate immediately to the closest refuge. So that was pretty surprising. We probably would not have known that if we didn't have those pit tag arrays going. So basically what happens is this little tag goes across the pit tag array, and that pit tag array powers the tag, and the tag will read back a number. It's similar to putting the tags in your dogs. It's a little tag, and you just wave a wand over, and it reads a number back to you.
Mm-hmm. That's the little bit of wire in the nose?
It's not a coated wire tag. Basically, it's a little bit bigger, and it is somewhat similar technology. These are a little bit bigger, and they have a much higher read range than a coated wire tag.
So they don't have to get that close.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, but this is a good chunk of stuff I noticed in the guts of the fish. I mean, not actually in the guts, but I mean, it's looks like this thing's about the size of a thumb, maybe.
I'd say it's a little bit smaller than a C battery, and it pretty much mostly is battery. We're hoping the battery technologies continue to improve, so we're hoping to get 3 years if the fish can survive that long. We've already had two fish harvested and several either expel their tags or die. So
expel their tags, you mean you force them out of their bodies?
Yes, it's a really interesting phenomenon. I don't quite understand it, but it's called transintestinal expulsion. They basically envelop the tag and start shedding it, and it's been shown in a lot of different radiotelemetry projects that fish can actually do that and still live through it.
Wow. I mean, it's not it doesn't look easy on the fish anyway. So they're taken out of the water. You make an incision and insert this thing and then stick the a bit of wire out the other side, it looks like, for the antenna. I mean,
yep.
Does it hurt them much?
We put them under a really, really nice narcotic, so they're out the whole time. It's almost just like doing surgery on a human. So, no, if you do it right, it shouldn't really hurt them. Of course, you're making a big incision in them, so later on they're definitely going to feel a little bit of pain for sure, because you made a pretty, especially if these tags being a little bit bigger. But the fish are also, fish we tagged range from 21 to 30 inches, so they can handle that small of a tag.
Mm-hmm. So how long a process is it from catch to release with stitches in?
Well, yeah, so basically we caught the fish in the morning, typically, and we had fishermen out there catching them hook and line, bringing them in. We held them in a large live well, like a big fish, portable fish tank. I think it weighs about 250 gallons. And then we do surgery in the afternoon and let the fish go later in the evening. So fish could be caught in the morning and potentially spend 10 to 12 hours before they're done and let go.
So how many of the red band trout got transmitters in all?
40.
40, okay. And you said a couple have either been caught or expelled. And so you're down around somewhere north of 30 still?
Yeah, so I think we've definitely, so these tags actually, they'll emit temperature back to us, they'll emit motion, and motion, it kind of tells us if the fish is still alive. So I think we've had about 4 or 5 fish out there that have shown inactive signals and haven't moved for a while, and then we've had 2 harvested, so I think we're around still 33 live fish.
Mm-hmm.
One of the amazing things, though, is it started off really fast. Like one fish was caught like 2 days after we tagged it, which I was pretty amazed that it actually would actually bite some sort of bait 2 days after tagging. And actually that person unfortunately kept the fish. Under Oregon state regulations, you're not supposed to keep radio tagged fish in the state of Oregon. Exception, I think there might be a few exceptions around the Columbia River drainage, but typically supposed to release these fish just because we spent so much time and effort and money getting these tags into the fish.
How do you get the word out to people fishing that they shouldn't hold on to fish that are so arranged?
So I talked to Herald and News extensively. We had a really big story. I also I write a weekly recreation report. I had it in there, and I also have signage every single boat ramp, and I also try to get the word out to everyone I can, including, you know, conservation groups, fly casting groups, stuff like that.
Well, there's a big honking thing sticking out. It looks like a big heavy chunk of fishing line, right?
I think people get kind of confused. That's what I've heard. You know, that's probably, you know, that's the, you know, the excuse I hear is, oh, I just thought it was fishing line coming out of them. So I try to tell them, yeah, it looks like really thick fishing line, but you gotta really look at it closely and then let the fish go and then report it to us. So yeah, we've had 5 out of 40 reported to us that have been caught already, so I thought that was really high so far.
Sure. So Bill, based on temperature and motion, and I assume location as well, what are you finding out so far? I've been in for a couple of months now, right?
Yeah, so they didn't go anywhere that we didn't expect them as of yet, but we were really surprised that a huge percent of them went in the Williamson River. And that can be expected. The area that we tagged them was the closest place was the Williamson, but I guess we weren't expecting, like, I think 27 out of 40 ended up in the Williamson River. So that's been really surprising to us.
Which did you expect them to be scattered around among the other tribs?
Yeah, we really thought that they'd, Rocky Point, there's a lot of fish holding in Rocky Point. We thought, you know, we'd get a lot of fish over there. We also thought we might get more fish up in the Wood River Delta, where a lot of cold water comes in. We did get 2 fish up there in Wood River Delta. Mm-hmm. And I think we got 7 over in the Rocky Point Pelican Bay area. So they did scatter around, which is really nice, but they really focus in the Williamson River. So that's really interesting.
All right, Bill, just about half a minute left. What do you do with the information now? I mean, once you compile all the stuff you need, what are you going to do with it?
Well, hopefully we'll have OSU, and we also have a grad student working on this project as well with Oregon State University. I think one of the great things is we're going to try to get it published in a journal. I think the thing as far as ODF&W management, I think, is just going towards 2 things. Hopefully trying to prove water quality in the lake, whatever water quality variable that is showing us, you know, why the fish leave the lake, if that's feasible. That might not be feasible. But also look at habitat restoration projects, which we've already worked, Toronto Limited is already working on one up in Crystal Creek right now as we speak. Work on those restoration projects to improve the conservation of these really unique and awesome fish.
Okay, a lot of work left to do then to understand better what goes on with red band trout in Upper Klamath Lake and their departures for some of the tributaries. Bill Tenniswood is an assistant fish biologist in the Klamath Watershed District of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.